Greetings from Space Station Banff, and this is the Banff Podcast, and today we are talking part one of our genre series, and today it's everything sci-fi. Mike Lafferty has put me in the pilot seat, so as I turn around, my co-pilot is Mike Lafferty, the esteemed creator of the Banff Podcast. How are you, sir?
Doing all right. How are you guys doing?
Not bad, not bad. And today also joining us is Mr. Dom Sumner. How are you, sir?
If it get any better, I might send my check back.
Dom has been cranking things out with Hazard Studio with publications for New Millennium Games for the last little bit. And we also have some V&V stuff coming out pretty soon. Can you give us a quick blurb about that?
Waiting to hear back from the management over at Fantasy Games Unlimited to find out if they're going to let me give me permission to go ahead and use some third-party publications. If they do, I'll have a couple single-issue releases to kind of test the market, and then after that, I'm going to go ahead and shoot for a mini-adventure.
Nice. So today we're talking everything sci-fi. First of all, what do you guys think constitutes like a good sci-fi property? Is it just the technology, or is it like a mixture of things?
Well, for me, it's got to keep me entertained, because there's been some sucky sci-fi out there. I mean, really, really bad stuff. Remember about the same time that Babylon 5 came on, there was also a similar show coming on. I think it was CBS or something, and it was horrid, just horrid. I don't even remember the name of the show, but it was horrible. But like I said, shows like Star Trek, Babylon 5. There've been some decent movies out in the last couple of years. Been some sucky movies as well. But basically, anything that keeps me entertained and I enjoy the characters.
Mike, do you have anything anything to add as far as like elements of what constitutes like a good sci-fi property? We seem to be having no sound. Hola, amigo. No sound from Mike. All right, so real quick, we'll shoot over to Dom. Is it just technology? Is it elements of the fantastic that we can't explain?
That's a good mix of everything. Like I said, not only the technology, the storyline, the characters have to be an engaging, somebody I feel like I can get into. When I'm get caught up in the story and I feel vested in it, then I like it. If it's something I can't keep track of, or like I said, the storyline is just outrageous, I'm just like, whatever.
Do you feel that when you're watching a sci-fi, can it have other elements mixing into it?
It can have a good mix. For example, like Aliens. Aliens was a good mix of horror and sci-fi. And also, Aliens is a war film. It took things from like old classic war movies, we had an ensemble cast, and mixed them all together, and it just worked.
And not only did you have the elements of the war film, not only did you have the elements of fantastic and horror, but there was a lot of tech in that seemed like it could happen at any time.
Yeah. Like, and it was believable tech, because a lot of stuff they had in Aliens film is things that are actually coming online now, like the getting the biofeedback from the troops, the helmet sensors, the cameras, the drone, the little robotic guns they were using. That stuff is actually coming online now. They're starting to actually put prototypes of it out on the battlefield. Things like the explosive rounds and for the pulse rifles, they've been experimenting those. They've actually used one in Afghanistan, like a couple of months ago. They tested one, and apparently it worked well.
And it sounds like we have Mike back. Were you attacked by aliens or nanobots?
Just hardware. So can you hear me this time?
Yes, sir.
All right. Hey, there's no echo. Okay, just switch laptops, and now we're working. So
nice.
So where are you guys at?
We were just talking about different elements of sci-fi films. What do you think constitutes a really good sci-fi property? Not necessarily a film, but like books, comics, stuff like that. Is it just elements of the fantastic, or is does it have to have technology or strange powers?
Boy, that's such a broad question. It's hard to narrow it down. If we're talking about what makes a good property, as in, you know, properties I enjoy in terms of science fiction, is that what we're looking at? As opposed to giant defying the genre. Boy, it's some kind of speculative fiction, sometimes set in the future. But I mean, there's a lot of things I would consider science fiction that, you know, boy, I remember back in the 80s reading Starlight magazine, Carrie O'Quinn, the editor, set out this huge firestorm. He told everybody E.T. is not a science fiction movie. It's a fantasy movie. You know, some kids meet an alien, and it could just as well be a fairy or some other dimensional creature. It's not really, nothing in that movie is really related to science in any, you know, it's not really what you'd call hard science fiction, which was his definition. If you look at, let's take Serenity, which I thought was a great TV show, but I mean, I'm not making any statement that hasn't been made a million times before when I say it's a Western set in space. And it was a lot of fun, and I loved it, but I mean, it's taken tropes of Westerns and kind of mashing up with the sci-fi elements. So, I don't know. I guess you can have some blending. The wife's been making me watch this show that you guys might like lately called The Last Ship. Have you heard of this one?
Oh, that's the guys in the Navy, and they...
It's actually shot aboard a U.S. destroyer, or a couple ones, and it's loosely based on a book from the Cold War. And in the book from the 80s, there's a nuclear war, and there's just one destroyer that somehow survive, and you know how they manage. In this one, it's sort of like a Walking Dead kind of thing without zombies. There's this huge outbreak, most of the population is killed, and so it's these 200 guys on the ship, you know, and how they try to find a cure and deal with it. And it's got almost a real kind of like original series Star Trek vibe, because a lot of the focus is on, you know, the interactions between the command staff and how they deal with missions and some of the dynamics that come up in there. And the first couple seasons were just great. Season 3, they've cured the plague, and the wheels kind of fall off because you don't really know what to do at that point. So, and, I mean, you know, the first couple of seasons are trying to find a solution, dealing with doctors, trying to, you know, fight off the few Russians who are left and, you know, get a, you know, and there's a bunch of stories you can tell in that kind of milieu. After they solve the plague and save the world, like, what the fuck do we do now? So they kind of get bogged down in a lot of political, you know, and next thing you know, they're all doing commando missions in China. And these guys are just sailors, so, you know, it kind of got silly. But, yeah, the first couple seasons were just really great. And, I mean, I'd be hard-pressed to call it science fiction, but it's set a few years in the future, and it's, you know, dealing in a semi-realistic sense with, you know, scientific situation being a plague. So I guess you'd call it science fiction. How do you call Walking Dead science fiction if you're going to use that definition? So.
I'm Walking Dead. Is a zombie.
Yeah. It's if you want to use what genre does it belong to, that's definitely where it goes. So, but I mean, would you call Guardians of the Galaxy a science fiction movie? Because I think you can kind of loosely say it that, but that's really a superhero movie, isn't it?
Yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy is definitely a superhero movie.
Yeah, so that, I mean, yeah, not to state the obvious once again, but I mean, a lot of the genres kind of bleed over, and people incorporate science fiction elements into other stuff. The way Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, science fiction elements mixed into superheroes, or Serenity, science fiction mixed with Westerns. So, I don't know, if we want to talk like pure space opera, stuff we think of as, you know, like pure space opera science fiction, I mean, you got to go back to stuff like Star Trek and Battlestar Galactica and, you know, maybe Star Wars. Although, once again, there's a lot of Western and samurai.
Yeah, Don't forget, too, you got Hyland's Starship Troopers from back in the 50s, like the book, not the movie.
Well, the book was decent, and then they also had a couple of anime. They had a couple of anime series, then they had the CGI series that came on back in the late 90s, and two really bad sequels to the movie that came out. They were get progressively worse. By the third one, it was just like, oh, my God. Luckily, yeah, I didn't pay to watch it.
Those are the direct-to-video sequels, right?
Yeah, correct. Both of them went straight to video. I heard there was a chance they were going to do a reboot of the series, so we shall see.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I would really like to see a series where they actually use like they did in some of the anime, some of the mech suits and stuff like that.
In the third movie, believe it or not, they actually introduced the armor, the power armor, at the very end of the movie. It was CGI armor. and they actually came in on the drop ship and dropped it on the planet. And that was actually part of the best part of the movie. It lasted 5 minutes. The suits didn't do too bad of a deal. They didn't do too bad designing the suits. And they stuck pretty close to the descriptions they use of the weapon system out of the book. So, with the flamers and the little mini nukes.
The jumpsuit, right?
They had two different types of suits. They had a marauder suit. Now, for the life of me, I can't remember what the second type of suit was called, because they used the actual drop ship with the little pods that disintegrated as they dropped. And they also introduced a couple different types of robots in the series. And then they based the board game off of sort of a combination of the CGI cartoon and the movie. The updated version of the Starship Trooper board game.
There was a board game.
They had the old Avalon Hill board game that came out back in like the late 60s, early 70s, but then they had an updated version they used in miniatures that they came out with the early 2000s. And for the life of me, I cannot remember who made that.
Man, I haven't thought about Avalon Hill in about 10 years. That's pretty cool. That's old school gaming.
That was like one of the first board games I ever picked up. I've still got a copy somewhere. Because I'm big into like sci-fi themed board games. I've got that. I've got a game called Grav Armor that came out from Dwarf Star back in the 82, 83 little mini game. Pay like $5 for it. Still have it. Let's see, like Ogre GEV, Steve Jackson Games. You know, this came out with a 6th edition of that. And I did a little bit of work on one of the playtesting for them when it came out, which was actually pretty fun.
Nice. Now, Mike, in the chat, you're mentioning one that was like one of the best things of my childhood, Exo Squad. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I was just surprised there hasn't been a reboot or any kind of, you know, this would make a great game premise, too. I'm surprised no one's tried to get the RPG rights, because I'm sure they'd be cheap right now. But, yes, it's Exo Squad. It's reminds me of the Expanse and some of the themes, the war between Mars and Earth. And you've got these artificial, you know, beings that are created to help with, you know, industrial operations on Mars, and they rebel. And the animation was good, but not great. And there was toy line that went with it. But I just remember it having really decent writing, especially for, you know, a kid's cartoon show.
Exo Squad was really good.
Yeah. I would like to see some more of that.
Anybody remember the old Star BattleTech cartoon?
Oh, I never actually saw that, but I do know what you're talking about.
Oh boy! If any of the guys from Fear the Boot hear this, we're going to be venturing into dangerous territory.
You know, this was in the days before the internet and iTunes and all that stuff. I just couldn't get it where I was. You know, I knew it existed. I was aware of the Palladium BattleTech game because I saw it on the shelf next to Rifts, which I was playing. But I just I never had a chance to see it.
Well, Palladium was Robotech for the Macross, the different Macross series. Because I never missed an episode of those when I was in high school. Came on the late 80s, and the late 80s was just a good time for cartoons. Because a lot of stuff now, in my opinion, sucks. But, I mean, I get all three versions of Macross. I get shows like Bionic 6. Another actually decent sci-fi cartoon was called Galaxy Rangers.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Oh, I just confused Robotech and BattleTech. I'm a fake geek. Sorry about that.
Oh, man.
I didn't realize there was a BattleTech cartoon.
Yeah, there was an actual BattleTech cartoon that came out. I remember when BattleTech was called Battle Droids, because I still had – my friend bought it. He bought it and, I mean, broke his neck getting over to my house to show it to me. And we sat down and read over the rules and played a game right like that afternoon when I was in high school. It was a guy named John Gould, because he was like a he was a BattleTech fanatic for the day, because he would spend hours sitting around designing robots.
Yeah, I had a buddy back in the day. They used to play BattleTech in the Army, and they had the miniatures. They would spend hours and hours painting. My buddy's big innovation of the game was they would actually do physical battle damage, i.e., if you beat a guy, you got to hit his mech with a hammer when the game was done.
Oh, no. Those things were way too expensive.
Yeah, I played in a couple of BattleTech tournaments when I was in the Army. The local game store used to have these huge sand tables they would set up with this incredible terrain, you know, blasted out cities and stuff. And you'd go down there with a handful of mechs that day and you know, your rule book in your back pocket and run down there and do some damage to, you know, other people's mechs and a fistful of hot dogs, you know, because they had like a barbecue going in the back and stuff. It was a pretty nice way to spend a Saturday afternoon.
Blossom Steam.
You know, I always liked BattleTech as a board game. You know, it was fun. boy, it just took too long to resolve a combat, though. Now you could be there for a long time trying to figure out, you know, what was going to happen. And we had that as a computer game, if we could play online. Oh, yeah, that was so much such a relief.
Yeah, and then when you were, you know, each thing had its own phase. So, like, you know, you had people yelling out, torso twist. It's like, oh, my God. Can we speed this up a little bit?
Oh, God. I really hated tracking heat. That was.
Oh, yeah.
I ended up coming up with a cheat sheet just to track heat on. So you could just move a little, basically put a penny on the chart, then had it run all the way down with the maximum amount of heat you could take. You just moved it up and down.
Nice.
It made things so much, and it was a simple solution. It made things so much easier.
Oh, you should have sold that to Fasa back in the day. You could have made some loot.
If only I had known. That piece of paper that I typed up and a penny.
And you could have been an RPG millionaire. And, yeah, it would have been we wouldn't be all able to get you on the podcast.
All the free miniatures I ever wanted.
There are not many RPG millionaires out there. I think it's
Monty. I switched them to my children. My son has already laid claim to my comic collection. No, Dad, you're getting old, and when you die... all your comics.
Oh God!
All your comics. He said he only wants to go through and pick out the X-Men and stuff he knows that are worth money. The rest of it he's just gonna give away. Oh, okay. Well.
So for those sci-fi purists out there, did you start blending into different almost genres, separate genres of sci-fi? Like Mike, you mentioned space opera. And now, Dom, you're talking about like hard sci-fi with stuff like BattleTech and stuff like that. Do you think that there's a point where they can all cross over, or do they really need to be kept separate so that they kind of maintain their own flavor?
For me, like I said, for me, as long as whatever it is, I'm either if I'm reading something, watching a movie or a TV show, as long as like the story, like I said, the storyline, I find it engaging, I'm cool with it. Other than that, I'm really not worried about it too much. You have some people that flip out, oh, this isn't this and this isn't that. I'm like, dude, as long as you're getting entertained by whatever it is, who cares?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. It's, you know, it's some genres, especially these days, with, I mean, as we mentioned, other, you know, previous genres have been shows that we kind of mash up different genres. I mean, it's such a broad field to define. I mean, like, you can say Interstellar and Star Wars are both science fiction, but, you know, they're drastically different. And I don't know if you can say Interstellar is hard sci-fi or not, because at the end you basically have those godlike aliens kind of messing with time to help us out, so it's still got elements of the fantastic in it. But, you know, Jar Jar Binks would look totally out of place if you were to walk in.
And well, Jar Jar Binks looks out of place in Star Wars, so...
Yeah, this is true. You know, I had a horrible Return of the Jedi moment about a month back. I forget what was going on. It was a rainy day or something, so my wife decided she wanted to watch the Star Wars trilogy, with the original trilogy, with my toddler. And, you know, the first two movies, I love Star Wars. Empire's okay. We get to Return of the Jedi, which I've avoided seeing for the last 20 years because I didn't care for it that much back in the day. And I was just thinking, wow, this is not a great movie. All the faults of the prequels are right there in Return of the Jedi. And I think that's why George Lucas was so stunned, was everyone loved Return of the Jedi, and it got so much praise. And if you look at it in the cold light of day, just evaluating it as a movie and not looking at it as, you know, everyone's been waiting 10 years to see how the story ends and no one wants to say anything bad about it. It just, you know, I just thought it was right up there with The Phantom Menace in terms of, you know, a piece of entertainment.
Ooh, that's tough. Speaking of the different genres and how you can break down a genre, especially sci-fi, starting off with a movie that made the rounds on HBO way back when HBO was first a thing, you get movies like Ice Pirates, you know, making fun of the sci-fi genre.
Or Spaceballs.
Spaceballs? Oh, my God. What constitutes a good spoof, you know, in regards to sci-fi? I mean, is it just spoofing the technology, or is it the storylines in general that you know, you just got to make fun of? Like, for example, you were saying Interstellar, you know, the godlike aliens, you know, could you play off something like that and do like a yogurt riff like they had in Spaceballs?
I don't know. It's kind of like we're asking, you know, what makes something funny? That's, you know, you know it when you see it, you know. Like, I like Spaceballs as an amusing 2 hours, but I didn't think it was an especially, I don't know, I thought I could have gone a lot harder on Star Wars. There were a lot, I mean, maybe missed opportunities there for some jokes they could make. But I don't know, Don, what do you think?
Basically, like I said, it's got to be funny.
Yeah.
It's got to be funny. Spaceballs was funny. It had a lot of good jokes in it. And Space Pirates was, it was a comedy, but it was actually, it was a decent movie. Or Ice Pirates, excuse me. No, it was actually a decent movie. Like I said, a movie's got to be good. You can't go in, and even though you may have a few funny jokes in there, if the plot line just pretty much sucks or it doesn't keep me entertained, I'm like, eh, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So it definitely needs to have space herpes.
Space herpes
are
pretty funny.
Now, you want to talking about mixing up genres. You've seen the trailer for the new Star Wars Rogue One. Supposedly, it's supposed to be a lot darker than the other Star Wars films, and more closer to like a what they consider a war film, or maybe like an espionage movie or something like that. So, I guess I'll go check that out to see how it differs from the last few films. But some people are upset saying it's too dark and they don't like the storyline. I'm like, how do you know it's too dark? You haven't seen the movie. You haven't seen it, but you're saying it's too dark.
Any opinions on Rogue One, Mike?
I thought the trailer was pretty good. I don't know. It's hard to judge just based on the 2 minutes. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. It's kind of cool seeing Forrest Whitaker in a Star Wars movie. But yeah, I mean, this is the Bothans, right? This is many Bothans who died to get us these plans. And these are the Bothans, or you know, these are the folks getting the Death Star plans before Episode 4, right? So you'd expect, you know, kind of, you know, intrigue and, you know, guerrilla fighting and all that kind of stuff.
So. And apparently, they don't make it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of what you would expect given the setup of, you know, when Star Wars opens and they're running away from a Star Destroyer with the plans, you know.
And things aren't good.
Yeah, you figured something really bad happened right before that scene. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it. I don't know. I guess I'll withhold judgment until it comes out. But, you know, I just think I'm probably going to regret bringing this up because I know it's kind of a contentious issue. But, you know, talking about sci-fi elements and other stuff, I mean, would you guys consider Ghostbusters to be a sci-fi movie?
The original or the remake?
Either. They're both kind of the same in terms of plot.
Yeah. I actually consider Ghostbusters a comedy.
Okay, all right.
A buddy film. You've got four guys. It's a buddy film. They get together, yeah. And like I said, there just happened to be ghosts in there.
Okay, so basically it's a comedy with sci-fi elements, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, okay, I can see that. Well, what do you think?
I'd go the same way. It has sci-fi elements, but the majority of the story is more about, you know, these guys who are never taken seriously. All of a sudden, now people have to listen to them because they were the only ones who saw this coming.
Yeah, that's reasonable. Hey, did we all hate the finale of Battlestar Galactica?
Weird. Very weird. And for hard sci-fi to go that trippy at the end, you know, because in the beginning, I think that's what really drew us in was it had that hard sci-fi element. It had that that use of good technology, like, hey, we can't use wireless technology because the Cylons can hack it. And you even saw that in the premiere episode when Adama is giving an interview and he's walking down the hallway and he's like, yeah, we have no network systems. And they were like, well, you know, isn't that antiquated? He's like, network systems can be hacked. And it was just, it was that, it, like, you could feel the technology that they had might be one or two steps away, but there was also the fact that different elements of sci-fi were just a hair different than in stuff like Star Wars, because in Star Wars you have stuff like inertial gravity fields and inertial dampeners that you know, make the ships fly the way they do in space. But you know, in Battlestar Galactica, you had directional rockets. You had things like, you know, you had to apply direction sooner than later so that you didn't get crushed by the weight of the G-forces and stuff like that, being created by the plane moving. So, I mean, it was things in space were silent. I mean, that was it was huge, stuff like that, you know. And then the huge part of it, as far as eye-blowing moment in that first issue, is the Cylons come out with Six leading them toward that ambassador, and you're like, what is this? This is not your daddy's Cylons. I mean, it was pretty wild. What did you guys think?
Dom, you'll go first. Dom, you there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just, I loved it the first season. I still watch sometimes at the gym, especially that one episode. Is it, well, the Cylons keeps showing up. Is it every 32 minutes or 22 minutes?
That was tense.
Yeah, that was like the second episode. That was really well done. And I loved a lot of the episodes up through the series, but at the very end where it got all kind of, you know, religious and metaphysical, and on like 2/3 of the cast turned out to be Cylons, I kind of felt like they were sort of copping out on the original premise. And the original premise is basically the Pacific World War II in space. And, you know, when it kind of gets all spiritual, it kind of feels like they've changed direction on you. And I don't know. That was my take on it. What do you think, Dom?
Yeah, the ending was just, like you said, it was just weird, where you had basically the Cylons and what was left of the humans. We land on Earth and somehow we're all the descendants. And I'm just like, I don't know.
Yeah, I really wasn't feeling that too much. But I don't know, maybe that's kind of the legacy of, you know, everyone doing so many drugs in the 70s and making sci-fi films like 2001. Well, 2001, I mean, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, 2001 actually came out in 69.
Okay, good point. I mean, it's ostensibly a very hard sci-fi movie in the beginning, and then it ends just complete, you know, trippy kind of what the hell just happened moment, which is sort of, I mean, Interstellar with McConaughey, you kind of have that there at the end with the aliens. Hell, that one Jodie Foster movie, also with Matthew McConaughey, meeting mysterious aliens.
Contact.
Yeah. And Battlestar Galactica, you know, arguably a hard sci-fi movie, but then you got the weird religious kind of overtones going on, which, I mean, actually were in the TV series back in the day, the Ship of Lights and all that kind of thing. I just wonder if maybe those elements are kind of melded as sort of a legacy of all that trippy 60s and 70s sci-fi.
Well, have you seen the trailer for this new movie, sci-fi movie coming up called The Arrival? It's got Forest Whitaker in it.
Oh, that looks so good.
Well, they've got the ships that come down. They bring in a woman to try to translate their language.
Yeah, she's like a language pathologist or something like that. Yeah, that's that looks really good.
And also, here's one for you. What do you think about the new Star Trek that's coming up?
I think it's cool. They're using that ship design from what's his name back in the 70s, and like the little 10-second trailer was pretty cool. But I guess I'd like more information about it. Also, I don't get why CBS is not going to broadcast it. So I'm going to be over their streaming service, who, like, nobody subscribes to.
I guess they're trying to boost their streaming service because they know they're going to get people subscribing to the service just so they can get the show. I know it, and they know it.
Either that or torrenting the hell out of it, but yeah, I mean, probably a little bit of both. So I think someone was making a joke, you know, Star Trek coming in 2017, available exclusively on torrent download. Yeah.
Pirate Bay is back.
Yeah. You know, my dad, I already started. My dad used to do that stuff, and I was like, you know, Dad, you got to cut it out. ISPs are different these days, you know. You're not hidden at all. He's like, oh, I'll be fine. And then one day, he was kind of glum. I was like, what happened? He's like, I got a letter from my ISP. They asked me to stop. Well, yeah, I figured that was going to happen. Thanks for that Russian language download of Green Lantern, though. I appreciate that. But, no, that's still the only way I've seen was a shaky hand camera, you know, download from a movie theater in Moscow, I think. That's about all the Russian I know. That and a few words that are just, you know, not suitable for public for polite conversation. But it was in English with Russian subtitles.
Well, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's a better movie if you pretend it's Deadpool pretending to be Green Lantern.
Nice.
That was funny in my head.
We had a couple questions come in from Twitter. One from Andrew Lorenz, who's a friend of the show. He's been on our Indie Creator Spotlight, and he's a pretty prolific indie comic creator. What would be your top couple of sci-fi movies from the last 5 years? Like, if you had to put, like, top three.
I'm going to think about that one.
Yeah.
There was a movie. So Go ahead.
No, you.
Oh. Did you guys, either one of you guys see it? It was a little indie film called Moon.
I wanted to, but I didn't.
I caught it on, actually it was like in a $5 bin at Walmart, and I picked it up, and it was actually a decent flick. It wasn't bad. Like I said, there's only one actor in it, and he's pretty much there by himself, and that was decent. And believe it or not, I actually liked Edge of Tomorrow with Tom Cruise.
Oh, yeah, the Groundhog Day with guns, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. It was actually – I actually liked it.
A lot of people did this. 90% Rotten Tomatoes. That was a pretty good movie.
So, that was pretty good. The one, I've seen several movies, and I'm trying to think something that actually sticks in my mind, because there've been a lot of movies I saw, and I was like, it was all right. The one with Will, I can't remember for the life of me to remember the one with, it was Will Smith and Jaden Smith, where they were on Earth in the future, and for the life of me, I cannot remember the name of this movie. It was okay. It wasn't that great.
After Earth?
Yeah, that was it. That's one where it was kind of a one-off type deal. I'm just kind of, I've seen a lot of movies like that recently.
That was M. Night Shyamalan, whatever, Shyamalan, I can't say his name now. Sense guy, you know who I mean. Europa Report was a movie I saw on streaming I really liked. It's done as kind of found footage documentary style. Hard science fiction about a manned mission to Europa to try to find life there. And I mean, if I was going to try to be, you know, snarky, I could say it's Blair Witch Project in space. It's really more hard sci-fi than horror. Although at the end, spoiler alert, turn off your earphones now if you don't want to know how it ends. They do find life on Europa, and it kills them, and they're never heard from again. So you know, kind of a downer, but really well done, really well written, and you know it. Makes good use of the old found footage documentary kind of trope that I got a Russian friend I used to drink pretty heavily with, and she tells me that particular kind of story is very typical of Russian movies in general, but Russian sci-fi in general. Now this is a European produced movie; it wasn't Russian, but so a lot of their movies. I guess you had this in Scandinavian cinema too. It, you know, tells a story of discovery, a story of exploration, and then everyone dies. And one person lives to make maybe.
That sounds like a Russian film.
Yeah. Life is hard and unforgiving. That is why we drink.
All right, I'd have to add District 9 to the list, because that was actually pretty good.
That was pretty good film, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm understanding there's supposed to be a sequel coming out. It's something. Well, really? Memory that at one point they were talking about a sequel. I don't know if it ever got approved or not.
That might be kind of hard to pull off. I mean, it'd be cool to see the guy stop being a bug.
Yeah, because Charlton Copley is he's a lot of fun to watch.
I agree.
Let me think here.
Would we call Inception a sci-fi movie?
Oh, yeah. Psychics?
Most definitely. Inception would be a sci-fi film. I mean, and I know a lot of people loved it. I thought Inception was okay. It wasn't all that. I remember everybody kept raving about it. And I go and saw it, and I'm like, it was okay. It wasn't that good of a movie, in my opinion. The storyline was basically like Ocean's 11 set in the future. You get a group of guys together. It's a heist movie. And so instead of stealing money, they were stealing something out of somebody's brain.
Yeah. It's a heist movie with fantastic elements. You know, if we're going to talk about good sci-fi movies the last few years, I guess someone has to say Avatar, so I'm going to say Avatar. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, I thought, did a really good job of taking kind of a fantastical idea and grounding it in the human situation. Because, I mean, who hasn't had a bad breakup or some kind of experience they want to forget about? And, you know, the idea that, you know, how much of your identity is tied to your memories. Would you get rid of them if you could? I think that's, I don't know. maybe that's what, you know, we want to talk about science fiction at its most relatable. You know, takes a question like that with, you know, a human grounding to it, and, you know, kind of follows it through to its end. But on the Avatar angle, Cirque du Soleil has an Avatar show right now called Turok. And it's about the first time somebody ever rode one of those two-winged birds on, and you saw in the movie. And I went to go see it in Denver, and a lot of people left after the first act. So,
really?
The second act was better, but it just, yeah, it just kind of meandered a lot. I think if you're a big Cirque du Soleil fan, it might have been more entertaining. If you went there looking for Avatar stuff, you were probably just kind of...
Well, they're getting like, Avatar theme park opening up.
Yeah, that's going to be... Where is that?
I think it's at Universal Studios. I've got to double check on it. Avatar to me, right. Avatar to me was basically... It was Dances and Wolves in Space.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it did it real well. I saw it three times in the theater. But yeah, I would I think that's a fair...
Are they going to be doing the sequel to that? I know James Cameron had talked about it at one point.
If I remember correctly, he's announced a couple sequels over the next few years.
I saw an article in AV Club where he was sounding kind of, well, I don't know how to describe it, but he basically said, I've overwritten. There's going to be one big Avatar movie and a sequel, and that was going to be it. And then I just got so into writing about things that were happening that I... written a new trilogy of Avatar movies, and I'm going to make them for the rest of my life. So,
well, there you go.
Yeah, so we'll see if they come out. I read a story, and this is one of those rumors that could be apocryphal. Maybe it ever actually happened. It was Dom said it was Universal Studios, so let's go with that. You know, whatever theme park's going to be having Avatar Land, the board members are having a meeting like, all right, when do we actually open Avatar Land? And, you know, someone said, you know, let's just put it off for a few years till the next movie comes out. They're like, no, we have to do it now. It's been so long since the last movie. And the argument was, all right, if you can name the name of one character in the Avatar movie, we'll do your way. And no one there in the boardroom could name even one character from Avatar. So they decided to table it until the next movie comes out.
Nice.
That's any of you guys remember? Any you guys remember a film? I can't remember. I think it was last year, the year before last. Elysium, the same guy that did District 9.
Yep.
I like the plot line for the movie and the setting, but the movie itself I thought could have been better.
Really? Okay. That was with Jodie Foster, right?
Yeah, Jodie Foster was playing like the big corporate bigwig on the space station. And Matt Damon, you know, was a guy, downtrodden guy, beat down guy, needed medical treatment, had to get to the space station to cure himself from radiation poisoning.
Yeah, it was right around the time of that whole Occupy movement. And I think that's basically what they were trying to say.
Now, I like some of the tech of the movie, too, especially like some of the weapon systems they were using. Those are nice because the stuff was actually pretty believable.
Yep, and you got those battle frames. The
robots that were acting as police.
Yeah.
That way they didn't show up, do a little retina scan. This guy's clean. This guy's on parole. This guy's wanted.
Yeah, that would make your job a little easier, huh?
Oh, yeah.
They had the same thing in the RoboCop movies.
Oh, the last one.
The last one, I mean. Yeah.
The last RoboCop movie where they actually were using private military contractors were using different types of drones and robots to do fighting, and they had invaded Iran.
Yeah, that was crazy. Now, if we could take all of the stuff that we've just been talking about and you could distill it into an RPG property, what RPG would you want to write and why? So, like, if there was a one sci-fi thing that you really needed to throw dice at on the table.
You know, boy, there's about three answers I could come up with, but the science fiction movie I liked the most this last year was The Martian. And I actually liked it so much I went out and read the book, which was, very similar, but a couple of key differences. I don't know if I'd want to do that with a rules-heavy system. I think maybe, which is weird because, I mean, the movie is very science-driven. I mean, the guy's farming potatoes with his own poop, and, you know, it's very, you know, can I take the rover this far many days to get to the takeoff site? But I almost think you'd want some kind of a narrative system to really kind of get that feeling. You know, maybe something fate-driven or something from the apocalypse world or, I hate to say fiasco because that's, you know, that's more of a comedy game in ways, but that could work too. So that's the first one that's come to mind. I mean, if we're talking about hard science fiction, The Martian might be the best example that I can think of, you know, just because there's no goofy spiritual resolution at the end the way you seem to get in those movies. So that's what I'll go with. Dom, what do you think?
Like I said, I actually like the setting from Elysium. I could see myself playing that in a game somewhere. Because like I said, it was a decent setting. You had the guys on Earth. You also had the people in the space station. You had a lot of crime, a lot of pollution. Apparently, there's a lot of small wars going on in that setting. And I could see somebody setting an RPG setting game in that. Or the rest of them, I'm not really sure. You couldn't do some of them. And believe it or not, the Battlestar Galactica TV series, up until the point where we started getting a little metaphysical, that would have been a perfect for an RPG game.
Well, didn't they make one?
They did, but I'm not sure how well it went over. There's some things I would change around to make it more gamer-friendly.
Okay. That was, let's see, was that Margaret Weiss? Do you guys remember?
I'd have to go and look to tell you the truth.
Okay. I know the board game was pretty well-received. Pull up a review here. See what it says. Yeah, that was from Margaret Weiss Productions, so that was a Cortex System game. So yeah, I didn't actually play. Did you guys?
No, I didn't. I didn't do that one. But there's a huge conversion community over on the Savage Worlds side of RPG land, and they convert everything to Savage Worlds. And they have a Battlestar Galactica hack that's actually pretty good. I've played it a couple times. It's fun.
You know what? White Star. Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they have a White Star hack of Battlestar Galactica as well. If you go to their Google Plus community, they a lot of those guys hack stuff together left and right. It's definitely pretty groovy.
Any of you guys remember the Babylon 5 game?
No.
I do. I had a friend, Ryan Leibarger, who's actually writing RPGs now. Back when we were tech writers together, 17 years ago, he used to bring that in and read over his lunch break. Never got a chance to play, but looked pretty interesting.
Yeah, the series is actually pretty good. I'd like to see him at some point maybe bring that setting show back.
They're working on it. Krasinski said they're working
on a Krasinski.
Yeah, they're talking about a reboot right now.
Okay. Because that was actually a decent show. I used to get upset when I couldn't get in it. I went and ended up buying the entire series on DVD and plus a couple of movies he kicked out. And apparently they're doing another show, Stargate. From what I understand, they're working on a reboot trilogy.
Really? Like
yes.
Movies? Or TV?
No, for the movie. Because originally when the movie came out, they said the plans were for it to be a trilogy. And then when the show kicked off and the show was actually more popular than they really thought it was going to be, they put all their efforts into the show. And so now they're going looking back. It's been, you know, 20-some years since the show, the movie came out. They're looking at rebooting it as a completely separate trilogy, which I'll have to wait and see on that because I like the movie. It was, like I said, it was an okay action movie. And then the director's cut has an additional footage in it that I like. And then I really love the show because, like I said, I've got the entire series and all the movies on DVD. So the second series, the Stargate Atlantis and the last one they came out with where they were on the starship, which I really didn't get into.
That one was weird. I could only get into a few episodes of that.
I watched like the first couple of episodes and it just didn't click with me at all.
Yeah. I was surprised. I mean, they're going to reboot it and it's going to be closer to the movie universe, which I thought was an interesting choice because the TV show was so popular.
Yeah.
But I guess
11 seasons.
Yeah. I mean, it was way up there. But, you know, I guess they're rebooting everything these days, so it's probably bound to happen. But interesting to see what comes out of that. Hey, speaking of science fiction TV, we probably should have spent a little more time on The Expanse. Did you guys watch that?
Oh, very, very good.
I haven't seen it yet. It's on my list of things to watch.
I watched it, this last year, and I was really impressed. I thought it was well done. The only problem I had was it wasn't really a character you could root for. At least that was kind of my perception. I mean, sort of like Game of Thrones if there wasn't a Tyrion. I don't know. What did you think about it, Walt?
I read the books. Okay. And then when the series came out, I was like, all right, you know, as long as I have my Martian Marines, I'm fine. It really paints a picture of the universe where everybody is really out for themselves. You know, the only people you really feel bad for in the or hoping that something doesn't go wrong is when they're having the flashback sequence on the series of the space station that got blown up. You know, that's you're sitting there and there's all these people who are basically rebelling against a company, and you're hoping that the company doesn't blow them up. You know, I mean, other than that, like everybody has a fault. You know, there's just a everybody has some sort of flaw that can be exploited, and that's what I felt the strength of the series was, because there wasn't just one dedicated action hero or the guy who drinks and knows things. You really had that sense that as time progressed, we as a society had become so decrepit and corrupt that everybody just had an angle to play. So you really, through the series, you're just looking for somebody to really root for, like you just said, Mike.
Yeah, I've kind of heard it described as sort of a sci-fi noir, and because you kind of got that Philip Marlowe kind of the whole world is corrupt and I'm very cynical about it all kind of point of view character.
Oh yeah, and, with Thomas Jane.
So I could kind of see that. You know, once again, say we're mashing up, you know, noir with sci-fi. You know, it's a different genre. Maybe, I don't know, I guess it happens with all genres these days. It seems like you get sci-fi elements, you know, imported into lots of other stuff.
What did you think of the physiology of the characters from the belt? The long bones, they have a hard time with gravity.
You know, I haven't read the books, The Expanse, but I've read lots of other science fiction over the years that talked about, you know, belter characters in human mining who developed like that. So it was kind of cool to see that idea presented, you know, on the screen, you know, because I've been reading about it in sci-fi for probably 20, 30 years. So I don't know, that was kind of cool. You know, I just Googled good sci-fi TV shows to see if we'd missed any. And it's amazing the shit that they call, I mean, I don't know, all the things they will call science fiction. Like, you know, they're going to group Smallville as a science fiction show next to, say,
what?
Quantum Leap and Eureka. And I think you might have to argue if you would really consider those sci-fi. Although one of the ones that throws up here is Stranger Things. Would you guys consider that science fiction? I thought that was more fantasy myself.
Stranger Things is like an odd mix of everything geeky from the 80s. You like horror films, RPGs, sci-fi movies, because, I mean, they played homage to things, everything from E.T. to Nightmare on Elm Street in that movie and the show itself. And
did you like it?
But Stranger Things?
Yeah.
Overall, I liked it. There's a lot of things I can nitpick about the show, which would be a show unto itself, because I could go episode, because one of my friends, we're getting this long discussion, she loves the show. And she was like, you didn't like it? And I'm like, I didn't say I didn't like the show, because overall, like I said, it kept me entertained. I kept going back because I wanted to see what was happening to the characters. But from the first episode on, there was stuff I could just, that I'm catching, and I don't want to spoil it for anybody that hasn't seen the show.
All right, so let's just say, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Stranger Things, turn off the podcast now. We're going to count to five.
Everything from, you know, you got the evil government guys there and the suicide, which, okay, they set up a suicide. She shoots the guy with a 9mm, but when they come in for the suicide, he's got a 38 on the table. Things like that. I'm like, and there's no powder burns on the guy's skull. He's got no gunshot residue on his hand. It was a different caliber pistol. That right there ought to set off some red flags. You get a really small town, and you've got 7 or 8 people disappearing over the course of 2 weeks, and nobody really notices.
Yeah, some of that stuff, you know, you're in a law enforcement profession, so there's things you're going to think of that the average TV watcher might
not even over. That. It's just like I said, it's a small town. Apparently everybody there knows everybody. You get 7 or 8 people disappearing in the course of like 2 weeks, people are going to notice. She just ran off. We found her car at the bus station. It's like, really? That's it?
Do you think that might have been part of the fun, was the wink, wink, nod, nod of it all?
Like I said, I understand it kept with certain tropes from the movies where, you know, let's all go to the party. Everybody drinks. The one little girl goes out by herself and dies. Nobody notices. I mean, things like that. But I'm like, let's get real, people. Some of this stuff would. I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
What do you think, Walt?
I liked it. I really enjoyed it. I liked the fact that it was a very ensemble cast. I liked the Goonies feel of it, you know, with them, the young kids. I liked the fact that it was a very inclusive bunch of kids. You know, I mean, it was just that felt like my childhood at points. So it was really, really cool to see that represented on the screen. Oh, yeah. What did you guys think of the monster?
The monster was, he was all right. I understand, yeah. Like it's.
Yeah. I haven't gotten to that episode yet, so I'll have to listen to your guys' response to that.
I binge watched the entire series one day when I was off, so while I was cleaning the, like, between cleaning the house and washing clothes and running errands, and then watching the entire show over the course of the day. So I get to see it back to back to back to back.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I really did. I liked it. I liked a lot of the fun bits behind it and, you know, the awkwardness of being that age, you know, combined with the innocence of being that age. It just it was a nice refreshing break from a lot of the stuff I normally dive into.
Yeah. And you had three distinct groups of characters in the show. You had the adults. They had their own separate storyline. The teenagers had their own separate storyline. And then you had the kids, and they all converged right there at the end.
That's a really good point. Now, with us coming down to the bottom of the hour, final thoughts on sci-fi?
I guess I'm wondering, you know, I haven't ever really played a really good science fiction RPG. I was in a couple of lackluster sessions of Rifts way back in the day. And I played a really short-lived Star Wars campaign that was where we were all just kind of novice Jedi. And I've never had a really great time doing a sci-fi RPG. Maybe I just had the wrong GM. So have you guys ever had a really good experience with science fiction games?
It's been a mixed bag for me. I played I remember playing games like Gamma World and FGU Space Opera back in the 80s. Like I said, it varies. It depends on the GM and a lot of times I think it has to do with the not the characters, but the players themselves, how willing they are to go along with the storyline and just kind of roll with the flow. Because if you get a guy that has his mind made up that certain things should be one way and he's just not willing to work with the GM on it, it's not really going to be fun for anybody.
Yeah, that's true.
My time in the Army, we had some really great sci-fi games that we played. That's why I was so happy to see our friends over at Evil Beagle Games, like Sean Fannin and you know, all the guys from Pinnacle, they were redoing Rifts because we had a long-standing Rifts campaign that we had had that was very similar to the TV show you were talking about, Mike, The Ship.
Yeah.
It was all these Rifts characters on a submarine traveling around Rifts Earth, getting into trouble, you know, and it was really, really, it was one of those campaigns when I think about my time in the Army back in the early 90s. It was one of those campaigns that was like, you know, when you were off mission and everything was clean and everybody would call up and be like, hey, we're ordering food, get over here. And we'd go to our one friend's house and play for an afternoon. And that was great. Couple of Star Wars campaigns that I can remember vividly that really stood out. But speaking of the new Rift stuff, have you guys taken a look at what they've turned out from Pinnacle?
I haven't had a chance to. What have you thought?
They've taken some liberties with the Savage World system that is a lot of fun, especially the Blaze of Glory mechanic, which is just an amazing thing that you could have done with stuff like Fate or some of the other systems that are out there, but the way that they put it together for Savage Worlds really works. When you're talking about doing that with a juicer, it even brings that to another level beyond. So I mean, some of the things that they've brought into Savage Worlds to make it feel like Rifts, like the the iconic character packages that they have in the beginning. The conversion notes of how to bring a regular Savage Worlds character into Savage Rifts. It, really, really well done. But as far as the books themselves, the production value is stellar. Gorgeous. So if you haven't picked them up, it's something to look at.
That'd be kind of nice to do as an actual place sometime to get someone to GM it.
Maybe we can bribe Sean to run a session. That would be awesome.
That would be pretty cool. So, all right, anything else we want to touch on before we wrap it up?
Not that I can think of.
Okay.
I think we're good.
All right. Cool, cool. Well, hey, guys, thanks for making the time today. I appreciate talking to you.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, started thinking back on movies I've seen and things. I'm like, wow, I've seen a lot of movies that apparently they didn't really make that much of an impression on me if I can barely recall them.
Well, it's after watching stuff for like, because, you know, we're all north of 30, so for watching movies that long, pretty soon it stops being actors.
You've got to stand out for me to remember you.
Well, this has been the sci-fi genre edition of the BAMF podcast. My name is Walt. We're here with Dom and Mike. And BAMF, we're out.